So our fourth technical session today will be overview of the current U.S. longwall gate support practices. Presenter will be Mr. Morgan Sears, PhD in mining engineering at NIOSH. Morgan is currently a mining engineer with the ground control branch of the NIOSH division here in Pittsburgh. He received his BS, MS, and PhDs at West Virginia University, and he's focused on practical numerical modeling and pillar design. He's an EIT, an experienced coal miner in the state of West Virginia. So, Morgan, take it away.
Hello and welcome. Thanks, Brandon, for the introduction. I'd also like to thank my co-workers, Dr. Burke Tulu, who traveled with me to just about all these mines, as well as Dr. S.C. Esterhazen, who is the PI on this project with the objective of developing better engineering-based design procedures for ground control in gate road excavations. In 2016, 37 longwall mines produced 62% of the coal mined by underground methods in this country. That represents a gradual but significant increase from an average of about 50% 10 years ago. Just due to that, the proportion of ground fault injuries and accidents that occur in underground mines in this country have shifted towards longwall mines. You know, general accident injury statistics can help provide a quantitative measure of industry safety performance. It tells us both where we are now and where we've come from. And as we can see from this, roof fault injury rates in the country's longwall mines have halved over the past decade. In the past few years, they've stayed relatively constant. However, if we apply this to reportable roof falls, it can also help provide a measure of ground support performance, industry and mine-wide. Here we also see that we've had a decrease in the number of reportable roof falls over the past 10 years, particularly in 2012, after MSHA released a program policy letter that provided a better definition of what active workings actually means. And they limited the scope to areas where miners were, you know, would be working at. However, in the last 5 years, there's been a slight increase in the number of reportable falls. And it's falls like these, those would be typically larger, at or above the primary support anchorage, or something that could, impair ventilation or travel of miners, that this project is geared towards addressing. The primary area of interest is the longwall tailgate. But to expand the scope of the data presented here, and has also been published at SME, I've included also the standing support that I've observed installed in number two entry, as well as roof support installed in the head gate. So in an attempt to try and quantify what's going on in this area of interest, I had to do what I call wading through the MSHA accident and injury database. And I call it wading because there's no easy way to pick out where in a mine these reportable roof falls occurred at. So I actually had to go through and just list all of them and go through the brief narratives that were written describing the roof falls. So because they're written by humans and everybody's different, there's varying levels of information contained in there. So I did the best I could, and particularly after Upper Big Branch, just about all of the roof falls that blocked egress off the face were recorded with that in that narrative. So I took these apart and looked at falls that occurred in the tailgate, in the headgate, and then other areas, other being perhaps the track or roadway, and listed them here. As we can see from that, you know, there has been a large decreasing trend in the number of reportable roof falls in this country's longwall tailgates. So to provide a foundation for this project, we visited 13 longwall mines over the past 2 years, 12 of which are still operational, and that represents about a third of the currently operating longwall mines in this country. In order to expand this database as much as I could, I went back and collected information that was collected by other researchers, trip reports, stuff like that, over about the last 6 years, and increased the size to 33 cases that came from 23 mines, 18 of which are still operational, representing about 50% of the currently operating mines in this country. Depths at these mines ranged from 400 to 3,000 feet, with mining heights between 6 and 12 feet. Entry widths range from 16 to 22. That's if you count the mines who have common belt and track in 2, 3, and 4 entry gate road systems. To kind of shrink pillar dimensions down into a single number, I just provided the width of the entire gate road to keep from any confusion from yield pillar designs, yield abutment designs, and those range from a 67-foot yield pillar design to 292 feet. Panel widths range from 600 to 1,500 feet and lengths from 5,000 to 22,000. I also included a mouth of panel barriers that is between the recovery room and the mains or submains, and those were 220 to 750. But statistics tells us that care should be taken if you're going to make inferences about a population outside the range of the database. So I wanted to compare what I had collected with the current longwall census that was provided by CoalAge in this year. And what you can see from this, with their depths ranging from 3 to 2,000 feet, mining heights from 4 to 13, and their panel widths of 530 to 1,580, that we get really close to actually at least having the boundaries of our database close to what's currently operating in the country. So to start off with primary support, in the headgate, so we visited 13 mines. I'm going to also add in here there's an N value, which that is the number of observations out of all the 33 cases that we had. The reason for that is not necessarily every single piece of information was collected by every person. So I took the ones that I had and provided some summary statistics. So typically this consisted of rebar, tension rebar, or combination, point anchor, resin-assisted roof bolts. In my travels, I have not seen any primary support that was a mechanical bolt, at least not in active areas. Those lengths ranged from 5 to 9 feet and with diameters between number 6 and number 8 bar. And bolts per row between 2 and 6. If bolts were being installed by a minor bolter and 2 were being installed with a center bolt being installed later, I counted the center bolt, the secondary support, and the 2 bolts as primary. With spacings that ranged from maximums of 4 to 5 feet. Although there were a lot of observations in the 3.5 foot range. For these, I also calculated the reinforcement density index, which is the load bearing capacity of the support per unit area multiplied by the length of the support element. And those range from 53 to nearly 130 PSI feet. Secondary support typically consisted of cable bolts and or cable or rigid trusses. Those lengths varied from 8 to 16 feet with an average of about 11 and diameters of usually 0.6 and 0.7. I did see a few cables that were larger than that, but they were not installed regularly. And they were installed 1 to 4 per row. One would be being a truss as opposed to, you know, a single element. And with a maximum of 4, with spacings between 4 and 10 feet. Combining this with the primary support, the reinforcement density index has ranged from 111 PSI feet to 333. That basically means that the mine that I observed that was putting in the most support was putting in three times as much as the one that was putting in the least. So, onto the tailgate. Standing support was the most commonly observed. There was a couple of mines that had options for cribless tailgates that we went to, but mostly standing support. And I broke these down into five categories. That'd be can type supports, pumpable cribs, wood cribs, engineered wood cribs, and yielding props, with the sixth category being cribless. Most mines had an option, had options in their roof control plans for just about any of these supports, which is, you know, normal. However, about 20% of them regularly or by design used more than one type of support. Regularly meaning they were using, you know, they would switch from one to another based on what they wanted or what was available. And by design, meaning they had one type of support, for example, in the tailgate and one type of support in the number two entry. Or another example being they would have yielding props when they were shallower than a certain depth and wood cribs when they were deeper. Or dependent on mining height. So for these percentages, each mine in here basically counted just one time. So out of the 33 cases, if there was two different types of support, that support type counted once for each mine. So it's basically these percentages would be what was observed as a fraction of the total number of support types. 34% of these mines visited used can type supports. 28% were using pumpable cribs. 21% used wood cribs. And 7% used either yielding props or engineered wood cribs. With a final 3% being cribless. So, when you look at this as a pie chart, we can see that you've got 2/3 of the supports that were observed being either can type or pumpable cribs, with the remaining third being wood and the 3% cribless. Now, 6 mines in this database have since ceased production since, you know, we collected all this data. So if you remove those from the observations, it sort of switches things around a little bit. You still see that about 2/3 of the support types are can type and pumpables, but a few can supports that were removed from the data set and the few wood cribs that were removed got shifted into the other categories. So, you know, how much support is actually being installed? All these support types are tested at NIOSH's mine roof simulator, which is a large hydraulic press, 20 by 20 foot platens that can supply 1,500 tons of pressure vertically over 24 inches and also 18 inches laterally. So we can load supports both vertically and laterally. To get the actual support capacities, I looked at both recent testing, so basically over the past 6 years or so, as well as information provided by manufacturers when that was known and provided it here. What we observed in the tailgate was between 1 and 3 rows of support with an average of almost 2. In the number 2 entry, that ranged from 0 to 2 with an average of about 1.4. In terms of standing support density, these ranged from 3.8 PSI to 33.8, which is just about a factor of 9. And if you want to think about that in tons per foot, those numbers range from about 6 to 44. In the number 2 entry, the support densities range from 0 to 28. So from all of these observations, what we see is that in the number 2 entry, there is, on average, less support, but it's still pretty close to what these mines are putting in the tailgate. So if you got any questions, I'd be glad to answer them, and then we can all go to the Pins Parade.
Any questions for Morgan?
Did you find that there was a relationship between depth of cover and the density of support being installed by the mines?
No, but here's why. the reason I think why is because we didn't, I mean, there would be no way to for us to actually be able to see all the support at all the different depths necessarily, so I don't have nearly enough information, I don't believe, to come to that conclusion. One person actually asked me the question of, you know, they said, you use the you know, the mathematical mean when you were calculating all these, did you ever think about doing a production weighted average? And I thought, well, okay, that sounds good, but then I thought about it again, and I'm like, you know, where we're sitting at right now, you know, with the current state of the industry, you know, we're, you know, next week or next month or next year, these production numbers could be very different. And it would switch your graph all the way around, and I don't think you'd really know anything from that either. So just throwing that in there.
The effectiveness of standing support can be greatly affected by straps and other means to control immediate roof deformation.
Sure.
And I wondered if you factored that in any way?
Not really, but I will say this. I didn't even include it because I probably meant to talk about it and didn't, but I was at one operation where, as a form of secondary support in the tailgate, they, instead of installing any extra standing support than they already were, they were putting in a row of cables right up against the panel side block to keep cutters under control, which according to them was working. So no, that was not really taken into account at all.
Hey, any other questions? All right, thank you, Morgan. Appreciate it. So that concludes our morning technical session, and as Morgan said,